You're listening to the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. Here, we'll help you unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship and self-development. This is your host, Alex Quinn. I'm a full-stack marketing executive and global keynote speaker. Get ready to get real-world knowledge from top-level entrepreneurs and world-class business leaders.
Hey guys, Randy Zuckerberg here.
Hi everyone, it's Neil Patel, and you're listening to Hustle Inspires Hustle.
This is the motherfucking CEO, Andy Frisella. You're listening to Hustle Inspires Hustle with Alex Quinn.
What's up, y'all? We're back. This is Brett Kaufman. Well, this is Alex Quinn with Brett Kaufman.
I am Alex Quinn, actually.
There you go. Yeah. We did a switcheroo today. Surprise. Today, we're going to talk about high-ticket sales and a little bit about emails. Yes. On a previous episode, we talked about copywriting. That was pretty dope. You've had a ton of experience in copywriting, which I'm sure has led you to work in a ton of high-ticket programs, a bunch of things maybe related to products, services, and I have a ton of questions for you. But before I dive into any of those questions, talk to me a little bit about high ticket. How did that come to be? How did you get into it?
Yeah. So if you didn't listen to the first episode, I got into high ticket sales the same way I got into copywriting. So The first organization I worked for, APAC, was the Bipartisan Pro-Israel Lobby. So I would then cold call you, Set my own meeting, cold call, cold email, cold text, eventually get you to sit down with me after I bug the shit out of you a lot of times. And then it would be at a coffee shop or maybe their office or a restaurant. And I would ask you for money between $2,000 to $100,000 first time meeting. Mm-hmm. And what we were raising money for, you don't even get a tax write-off unless you give it like the 100,000 level. You don't even get a fucking t-shirt. You just feel good that you're investing in something. Mm-hmm. So I had a really, and also the people I'm soliciting from, you could be as Republican or as a liberal, like you're on opposite sides of the spectrum, but the same message, meaning the product is the exact same. So I had to learn how to say the exact thing, but differently based on the ears that needed to hear it.
Mm. And that was on the fly. You only found out once they picked up the phone.
Yeah. And then also set the meeting. I didn't necessarily know where you leaned until we sat down, where you're like, I hate this person, or like, I can't wait for this person to get elected. And then I'm like, okay. And I'm like, what else do you care about? And then I figure out that this is their main issue. And then you have to find their sub issues that they care about. And then I didn't know how to present what we were doing to solve that problem that they cared about specifically.
Yeah, and if they're spending that much money, you have to understand every motive behind why they would spend it or why they wouldn't.
Yeah, and this is politics, so it's already messy to talk about. So it's
really very emotional. Messy.
Yeah.
All right.
It was super fun.
Can you walk us through your process for successfully closing high-ticket sales deals?
Yes. So my process is at the beginning of the call. I know some people are like, I don't like rapport. I want to get to know you. I want there to be like us comfortable talking to each other. And then I set the frame. Hey, listen, this is what we're going to do on this conversation. I want to get to know you a bit more, understand what your struggles are. If I find I can help you, like, I'll tell you about that. If I find that I can't, I'll refer you out to someone who can. And you need to be genuine about that, because I hate when I see all these sales scripts that say that, then they pitch the person anyways. I actually find so much enjoyment of saying that you're not the right fit for me, because now I know I'm not going to bring someone into my organization that I can't help. And I actually genuinely get to connect them with someone that can help. So being authentic, like we were talking about with copywriting.
Yeah.
Then, of course, next part of the process is understanding what their exact problems are, and then really understanding why they want to solve the problem, what their life will look like after the problem is solved, and then what's stopping them from taking action today to solve it.
Okay. I love that. Beautiful. How do you handle objections and challenges during the sales process?
I pause a lot, in the sense that oftentimes if someone says something, there's usually another sentence following it.
You let them finish it.
Yeah, because I don't need, like, you will talk yourself in or out of something usually. I don't really need to do much. So the idea is, like, if I hear someone be like, too expensive or not the right time, I'll just, and eventually then they'll say something, and then they'll give me another nugget to get an idea. Is this real or are you just afraid? Which is okay.
It's so awkward, but so effective. Like when you just don't say anything.
Yeah.
I hated doing it at first. I learned it from Chris Voss from Never Split the Difference. Had him on this podcast as well. Check that episode out. It's a 2-part episode.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You just, on a sales call, somebody just gives you an objection or, you know, is sharing something with you. And then you're trying to fight the urge to say something like, oh, I'm going to overcome this negative, or I'm going to ask this, or I'm going to ask that, and just stay quiet, because they're going to feel the need to explain themselves again to fill the void of the quiet.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Works really well.
Yeah.
And at first you think it's, at least I thought it would make you sound or look like dumb. Like, why are you not talking? Or like, why are you, but it's, people don't really see it like that because they don't know. They're just having a conversation. You as a sales professional, as a sales expert, who's trying to actually get info from them to actually help them out. Sometimes you have to use tricks like that.
Yeah. And that's why also I don't like the term closer. I hate when people say I am an expert closer. I'm like, first off, being an expert closer means that the marketing is fantastic, because for you to be truly an expert closer, the person needs to be so well framed going into it. Because I've seen so many great quote unquote closers go to a new team and then bomb because a person's not qualified, kind of like Jeremy, right? Yeah. Like Jeremy Haynes, fat cat closers. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that if the person's properly warmed up, your job truly on a sales call is to listen to them and genuinely see if you can help them at the stage that you're at now. It's actually to say no if you genuinely can't do it versus saying yes, just to get them in the business.
There you go. What are some common mistakes businesses make when trying to close high ticket sales?
Enrolling everyone. Don't do that. Also talking too much and thinking that their product can solve anyone's issue.
Enrolling everyone, meaning like onboarding just anybody just to get money through the door?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then especially if you have a money back guarantee or any type of guarantee, you're going to find yourself going through admission, chargebacks, all types of stuff. You don't want to deal with that.
But I also get like we all go through that, but I could help them. Or maybe when they see this module or this, you know.
You try to justify. Yeah.
And eventually I feel like everyone needs to learn that where, you know, you'll just. You know, it's not going to end up working.
It's like you're trying to date this fine ass girl, but she's crazy as you're like, maybe she's not that crazy though. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I could help. I'll change her.
Yes. You will be the one to tame this.
You will. Yeah. Right. You're going to be the one.
Yeah.
So I like that advice. I like that advice. Thank you, man. What are some ethical considerations you keep in mind when closing high ticket sales deals?
Again, can I genuinely help you? I feel like this is going to be a very common theme throughout because it's true.
Or can you afford this for real? And is your expectation aligned with what I'm able to deliver?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, that's a very good point.
Sam. Yeah.
And going back to can you genuinely afford it? That's why I think everyone should have some sort of downsell like that can actually help someone, not like a bullshit downsell.
Yeah.
Because like, let's say we sell something 5K just as an example. And I know because where you are in life, you're being honest with me. We built trust. I know you can't do it. Here's something for $500 that can actually help you get your next $1,000, whatever it is an example.
Or skip like the first 20 steps,
yeah.
You know, and gonna give you a little push.
And that person, if they buy and take action, they're going to be so much more grateful for you. And even if they never enroll, they will probably sing your praise to other people.
Share it with friends.
Yeah. That person said, you're not the right fit for me right now at this stage, but you still helped me.
Yeah.
It's a long way in goodwill.
It says a lot about you. And then they're going to remember that in the future. And if they ever have the means to do it, they're like, well, this person treated me super well, even when I didn't have anything to give or very little to give. So imagine what they could do if I actually give them the full money that they're asking for, or all the resources that they're asking for.
Totally.
Okay. How do you establish trust and build relationships with potential clients during the sales process?
Being very vulnerable. And sharing also about your experience when appropriate. No one wants to just listen to you bab about your story. It needs to be obviously in time and place. And the other thing is going into the conversation knowing that this person may or may not close. And part of that is completely out of your control. And that is completely okay.
Yeah.
Because when you try to force to close, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So being able to be like, what's it when you're just remove yourself from the outcome and be like, I'm just going to show up to be the best version of me to help this person the best way. And whatever happens, happens. You will close more deals from that frame than following just a sales script.
There's an attorney called Sean Callagy. I hope I'm not butchering his last name. And during a call I was on with him, it was a training call, sales call. He talked about analyzing a phone call, like listen to a pitch and analyze if the salesperson is being heart to heart versus head to head. So head to head is like straight like business, just like trying to close. Heart to heart is more like hearing the person.
100%.
So having a good balance of too heart to heart, because then you know you're not being objective and you know business, not too head to head, like head on, like trying to close them, but just find that balance where you're trying to understand what the real problems are, how you could actually help them, and then obviously closing them with logic.
Yeah.
So it's all about balance, I believe there.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's some people that don't like the small talk at the beginning of a sales call. I don't think anybody likes it, but you have to do it, because if you're somebody that's trying to close a deal, you want to make money. And if you're on the other end of that phone, you're looking for a little bit of help and you want to get to know the person a little bit, because let's say you're going to pay them a lot of money.
Yeah.
Or like, let's say when you pay a lawyer a lot of money, wouldn't you want to be able to reach out to that lawyer anytime and they reach out to you and they actually talk to you? And you only could do that if you build rapport and if you actually had some small talks, you could get to know them as a person versus a transaction.
Totally.
How do you identify and target the right prospects for high ticket sales?
How do you identify and target the right prospects? Well, this also goes back that the best company needs to be experts in marketing and experts in sales, because you can be trained as the best closer of all time, but if the person isn't framed well enough or doesn't know like why they're on the call with you in the first place, no magic script or your ability to pause is really going to bring them in. So what that means that the best salespeople today, and this would allowed me to fortunately be very good, I had to also become a really good marketer and then now eventually an excellent marketer, where I had to pre-frame the person before the call, make sure that they knew exactly what we were getting on, get questions from them so I knew their pain points and their problems before we even got on the call. Because otherwise, the person would be like, I don't really know what we're supposed to talk about here, and that just wastes all of our time.
Yeah, and having a good log of the person you've already spoken to, remembering their past conversations, because especially when you're a sales professional or even just a business owner and you're just talking to a lot of people, it's very easy to forget who the f*** you're talking to and what you've talked about before. And you don't want to come off as rude trying to sell some expensive shit, and you don't even remember the last time you talked to the person. So it's very good to have a log.
Totally.
How do you handle rejection and bounce back from lost sales?
You cry about it. That's it. That's the answer. It's going to happen. It's going to happen all the time. So the idea is that when someone doesn't buy from you, you just have to realize that it may be because of something completely out of your control. Mm-hmm. So that's what you mean, like detaching from the outcome. The other part is you actually need to learn from your mistakes to see if it was something that you did. So when we were in break in between shooting here, you say that you watch your own podcast to see if you sound articulate. That is genius. Everyone needs to listen to their own sales calls. Am I being clear? Am I being concise? And I actually hear what they were trying to tell me in that moment. Mm-hmm. You're not watching your own game film. You're never going to improve.
Yeah. And it's weird, right? Because it's almost maybe a little cringe, like, oh man, I got to go listen to that. And oh my God, I can't believe I did that. Or, oh, I interrupted them right there and they were about to give some golden nugget. It's like, but you practice.
Right.
Exactly. We show up every day. This is episode number, I think 90, 91.
Yeah.
I want to do a good job. You know, I don't know everything and I learn. This is, for me, learning experience. This whole thing to learn. It's been like 2 or 3 weeks we've been trying to plan this episode. And I texted you a few days ago and I was like, we need to do 2 episodes. Because you have a lot to talk. Like in my mind, I didn't tell you something about, you have a lot to talk about. This is long overdue. We need to be prepared. We need to do it right. And that's what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about being solid. It's about being consistent. It's about being able to be the best version of yourself and not be afraid to judge yourself in the hopes of bettering yourself. It's not about beating yourself up. Oh, you suck. Yeah. Oh, look at you talking on camera. You sound like a fucking dumbass. No, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to stop doing this. I'm going to stop saying these type of words. I'm going to stop cursing. I've never been able to get rid of the stop cursing one.
Maybe at episode 200, we'll get there.
You know, that's how I talk, for better or for worse. And I just want to be myself. I don't want to just turn on the camera and be just like Mr. Perfect. No.
If it's on brand, it's on brand.
If it's unless you're speaking to a bunch of kids, you know.
And you have to curse more.
Then you have to curse more.
Teach them early.
We're playing, by the way. Leave the kids alone. Can you walk us through your approach to building rapport and establishing a strong connection with a potential client?
So for me, it's setting the frame from the beginning. So building rapport, it's not just like, oh, we have commonalities. It's like, why are you here? Like, what are you actually trying to get out of this call? Like, what brought you here? So what's your motive? One of my favorite questions is, what was your motivation for getting on a call with me today? Yeah. I want to know where you're at now and understand like how well, one, you know us, two, how well you know like why you're here and like what exactly are you trying to get out of this? So if you frame the call properly at the beginning, it gives you so many more nuggets and avenues to go deeper into the call. But I don't think rapport, to me, rapport is not, oh, where are you from? Oh, I vacationed there last year. It's like, no. Why are you here? Like, how can I best help you on this call?
Yeah, like, how did life, like, bring you to this call? Yeah. And how can I make the best out of that? And if I can't, who can I connect you to that could help you?
Right.
We talked about that in one of the previous answers. Can you share any tools or resources you use to help streamline your high ticket sales process?
This really comes down to what the business owner, if you're like a closer on a team or if it's your own business, like, are you using ClickFunnels? Are you using, what else are you using? ActiveCampaign, ConvertKit, Kajabi. It's like, what are you most comfortable with?
What's your tech stack? Yeah.
Yeah. I say that because you need everything to sing together. You need to be in sync with each other. That allows most being fluid, because the biggest drop off you'll see is that, let's say you have ClickFunnels and now you're going through ConvertKit, but the Zapier is not talking to each other. So your follow up is not actually going to the person,
not or triggering.
They're not getting pinged. Oh. And then you think you're doing good, but the person's like, I didn't hear from you. I didn't know to show up to a call. So it's so nice when you have everything in one spot and everything talking to each other.
Yeah. That Zapier, however the hell, because everybody says it a different way. Solid tool that connects all your apps, all of your wares, and they're able to trigger basically commands based off whatever happened. So let's say somebody came in as a contact on a spreadsheet. That spreadsheet then notifies your email marketing software. Your email marketing software then notifies the text marketing software. Then the text marketing software go ahead and notifies the sheet again to let them know that everything is done. And all of that did itself by itself without a human needing to go through all that process.
Yeah,
that's as much as I could simplify what that tool is now. To build on what you just said, I've dealt with that a lot where, you know, you have your tech stack and sometimes something is off, a billing goes off, something disconnects, you switch the password, now the connections aren't. You have to have an audit system, whether it's weekly, whether it's monthly. Make sure you have backup credit cards on all your softwares. Yeah. Make sure you have two-factor authentication on absolutely everything, no matter how foolish you think it is.
Yeah.
That stuff is all very important. What do you think about that?
Oh, I agree.
Yeah?
Because you mess up one time and you're like, fuck.
Hey, I just wanted to jump in real quick to tell you about how to train yourself in organization, balancing your priorities, developing successful habits, and most importantly, having a better mindset. I'm giving free access to resources and materials on business management and self-development. Go to hustleinspireshustle.com/app to get access. That's hustleinspireshustle.com/app. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter at Hustle Inspires Hustle. Okay, let's get back into the episode.
And then weeks could pass and you think everything is fine. And then, like, oh, guys, these emails weren't sending. The zap didn't trigger.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want that. You could lose a lot of money, because to some businesses, it's $100, $1,000. To some businesses, like the ones you work with, the ones I work with, are millions of dollars in mistakes. And we can't afford that.
Nope.
Or maybe we can, but we don't want to.
Yeah, sure.
How do you handle situations where a potential client is not quite ready to commit to a high ticket purchase?
You give them space and you say that is completely okay. I always like to get a gauge towards the end of the call when we're talking about, like, is now a good time, and being like, is now a good time? If they say no, just be okay. Like, when do you think is a good time? Or like, why do you think it's not a good time? Like, what's going on? So you kind of get gauged and you say, all right, well, if this wasn't happening in your life, would it be a good fit? Why I like that is because oftentimes people just make up excuses. So I'm like, okay, if I remove that for you, would you decide now is a good time? And that's also great for pricing. Okay, let's say it didn't cost us amount of money. Is everything I'm explaining to you, do you think it will solve your problem? Yes. Okay. At least that gives you an idea that maybe you didn't frame the price what the product is. So if someone's genuinely not ready, you give them space to allow them to explain themselves on why. And then the best thing about that is if they're genuinely, genuinely not ready, you take all the notes that you can about why, and you send them such high, strong follow-up on the certain dates you know they're going to be ready, and about the pain points that they had. So you're always staying front of mind, being like, hey, whenever you are ready, here's how this is solving this problem for you. This is solving this problem for you. Here's someone just like you who enrolled. Yes. Now 3 months from now, whatever it is, like, their life looks like this.
Storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, you're listening to this and you haven't listened to an episode we just recently dropped about copywriting. Do yourself a favor, finish this episode and then jump to that one. You're going to be able to kind of bring everything together and you're going to see how both episodes really speak to each other, and you'll be able to draw a lot of golden nuggets from that. Another thing about the person not being ready, I always like to ask the person, no matter what product or service it is that I'm working on, if it's a sales call, about timing. Because a lot of the times people know they want to do something, but they don't have a sense of urgency. So if you could add that sense of urgency by asking them, when do you want to have this done by? When were you thinking of launching this by or purchasing this by? All of a sudden, you've made them think about a date that they maybe weren't thinking about before. And they're like, damn, well, I don't know. Well, are you looking to do something in the next week, 2 right. weeks, a month, and then you kind of gauge things out. And maybe they're not ready in that moment, but you have time for follow-up, for emails, text messages, retargeting on social media, overturning objectives, or providing value-driven content, value-driven follow-up to help that person understand how you could better help them, show them testimonials, like you were mm-hmm. saying, show them look at somebody just like you. Then specifically like high ticket, we're talking high ticket. A lot of people get bummed out when they don't close right away. Sometimes the sales windows on high ticket are a day. Sometimes they're a month, 2 months, 3 months. Some are even longer. So it's good to also know what your conversion window is.
And our mentor, Jeremy Haynes, has a great quote saying, if you know you can solve someone's problem, it's unethical for you not to follow up with that person.
Yeah.
And a lot of closers are like, I don't want to follow up with them. It's too much work. Or like the person's getting annoyed hearing from you. If you do it appropriately, then the person, and you know you can solve their problem, that person will be thankful.
If you're always being of value, why would somebody tell you to fuck off?
Right.
Like, can you imagine like somebody trying to sell you this amazing service that you, maybe you could afford it, but you don't want to spend the money right now. And you got this cat sending you stuff every week that's helping you out. It might not necessarily be everything you were looking for, but Jesus, this is solid. I'm at least going to stay signed on.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell them to screw off.
Right.
I might. It might catch me on a bad day, but it's a game of numbers. Mm-hmm. How many people will appreciate that? We were talking about that before we started recording. You asked me something about my sales process and at the agency about the outreach. And I told you, we look at this, we look at this, we look at that. Maybe on the front end, if we're not successful in getting the responses we want, we look heavily on the follow-up and we were able to draw from that.
Yeah. And to that note,
you reap what you sow.
Well, I love what you said, because when we get into email, I'll talk about this, but one of my favorite things to do in email, you need to have your unsubscribe, because that's unethical not to have it. But you can have, do you want to pause communication from me for like a week? Mm. And so the person says yes, meaning they don't unsubscribe from your list. They just don't want to hear from you right
they
now.
They need a break.
Yeah. And that's totally
they
cool.
Need a hall pass.
So if yeah, exactly. So if you can add that into your sales follow-up sequence, it's a very similar process. So don't.
I've never done that.
It's, yeah.
Wow.
It's very helpful.
Yeah, it's like almost like relieving some unknown tension. It's like, hey, I was thinking of breaking up with you, but I've never actually done it. But then you bring something up. You know, Chris Voss talks about that. He talks about addressing an issue before somebody else does. So let's say like, you know, you fucked up somewhere with your girlfriend, with your mom, with your dad, with a business partner. You address right away.
Yep.
Yo, I know I'm an asshole for doing this or that. I know I fucked up. How do you want to handle this? What do you want to do? Because that could actually save something that was about to be broken, but you just fix that by addressing it and like, you know, creating a system.
And it shows you're taking ownership.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's why I love sometimes when I get to follow up like 25, I could be like, hey, I know this might feel a little bit like I'm always, you know, checking in on you, but it's because of this reason. So yeah. I'm literally acknowledging what's going on.
Sending memes and being funny sometimes is also, it's also interesting.
Yeah.
We use memes in the follow-up some and like funny stuff. Talk to me about emails. I know that you have a lot to unpack about emails. Let's hear it.
Email is my favorite marketing channel.
Mm, that's a bold statement.
Forever.
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 Okay.
Because think about it. I'm sorry, I think I have like allergies in this room or something. Email will never go away. You need an email to buy anything. So when people say email marketing is dead, I'm like, how is it dead?
Like, you're dead.
Yeah, exactly. You loser. Think about it. You sign up for a bank, email, right? Like I had to renew my global entry to come into, you know, for, it's like TSA, basically pre-check. But the idea is that
right. An
email, like everything's email. So the idea is you're going to have to use it. So when people say email marketing is dead, they just want you to buy something else. Why I love email.
Or don't understand it. So they just say it doesn't work because they don't understand it.
Yeah,
because
some mentor or mastermind they're in told them to say it because they just follow that. You know, it's a whole other conversation. But anyways, why I love emails is because we've seen, especially during like more of the height of COVID, so much cancellation of like accounts. If you said the wrong thing, regardless how you feel about it, but there's a lot more of that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to be more and more censored. Just it's how social media is.
And that you have control over.
Email you have control over.
Yeah.
And you are able to speak one to many, but one to one. Because I can send a broadcast email to my entire list, but I can speak one to one to you and make it feel personalized.
Yeah. And segment people, lists, all that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Returning customers are overlooked so much because most of the time you see people concentrating on new business. Like, can you please look at how many people return and how much of your business actually comes from return customers? And then ask yourself, what are you doing to speak to them? Because if you're not doing much and they're still returning, oh my God, you have a lot of opportunity. Have no clue.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you want me to get into some dirty secrets about emails?
Very dirty stuff.
All the dirtiest stuff.
Yeah.
So banged our head so many times against the wall and finally figured out why our emails are landing in promo or spam sometimes, unfortunately. Yeah. So for those that aren't familiar, Gmail created these tabs years ago. There's a primary tab, there's a promotional tab, and there's a spam folder. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows no one checks spam aside from me. The promo tab is, that's all I do. And me.
Just in case you never know, you're slipping and you got some good opportunity in there.
Yeah. So if you want to pitch me, I will be reading my spam emails. They're very fun.
I'll see you in my spam.
Exactly. So Gmail created the promotion tab because they wanted to make the user experience that much better, which right. meant any email that feels promotional lands in the promotions tab. Cool. Problem is that tab only gets clicked on 19.4% of the time. Then they need to sort through all the other emails in that tab just to find your f***ing email. So point being is if you land there, you're not going to, it's a very low chance of being open. So you want to be in primary. Mm-hmm. The question is, how do you get in primary? Well, Gmail looks for three main things to decide what inbox your email to land in. Number one, do you have the right Gmail ID? This is just like going up, trying to get into like a club as an example. Well, if you're not as cool as Alex, trying to get into a club and you give the bouncer your ID and he's like, this isn't you. You're like, well, of course it is me. He's like, no, the ID does not match you. Therefore, I can't let you in. Gmail is saying, if you don't have these codes set up in the back end of your email service provider before you even mail out.
The DNS,
the DKIM, yeah. the SPF. Mm-hmm. They think you're impersonating your account. They're going to put you in promo and then eventually spam.
Yeah.
The second thing is not getting a lot of replies. Gmail loves engagement. So Gmail wants you to treat this like you're DMing someone on Instagram or texting a friend. So the easiest ways of doing that, have a confirm your subscription, make it mandatory, because the more Gmail sees someone consenting to being here, because they don't know if someone joined in from an ad. They only know if someone confirmed their subscription in your
email. After joining in from an ad, yeah.
Yeah. Then that shows Gmail, this person wants to hear from you. Mm-hmm. And have some of your call to actions being like, hey, respond to my email and I'll give you whatever it is, versus just putting links in there. And the third thing, which we can go very deep on if you want, is avoiding using words or languages or links that's going to land you in promo. So there's certain words that are like big no-nos you don't want to use. Mm-hmm. And then your links could be blacklisted. And that means Gmail's going to pick it up and be like, this is spam, or, you know, promoting and then eventually spam. Or if your link, or sorry, if your image is too large, Gmail is actually, apparently I learned this, they're lazy. It costs them more money to send an email with a lot of images. They're going to put you straight in promo.
Mm. So it's better to just like drive it or Dropbox it and put content in there that you're trying to share if you are trying to share it. Is that what you're saying?
So there's different routes. So for images, you want to run everything through tiny JPEG. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, because that will shrink it, make it appropriate.
Web optimized, whatever, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another great hack is if you are using images or links, the more Gmail, so Google products you can use, the more likely Gmail is going to put you in primary, because they love that, because you're using more of their services. And the links, you need to run everything based on, you need to check your IP, you need to check your domain, make sure none of this stuff is blacklisted, because that's going to be the biggest thing that's going to put you in promo or spam. And then the other factor is Gmail really does not like if you send more than two links in your email, like clickable links. That includes all your social media panels if you have there in the bottom. Because Gmail sees that, oh, you're promoting. You have seven links in here. You must be promoting something to that person. I'm putting you in the promo tab. So you'd be very cautious of how many links you have.
You just dropped some bombs on here, man.
Just wait till we get into the words not to use. We can go into that.
Let's go into the words.
Okay, I need 1 second.
Yeah.
So we used to have, excuse me, we have a list of 43,000. And our open rates used to be 20%, which is cool, fine. Now our open rates are close to 60%.
Damn.
We 3x'd our ability to you know, sell to our list.
Same efforts, same ad spend, better results.
We just now know what not to say.
Right.
So some of the no-no words to use, obviously anything that sales, promo, free, buy now, anything that feels salesy, mm-hmm. right? Fun fact that we learned. We did a copywriting boot camp. We sold to our list and it was $4.97. We put $$4.97. That went to promo. We removed the dollar sign. It went to primary. Because Gmail's algorithm is reading the words literally. So because you remove the dollar sign, it doesn't know if you just wrote $4.97 or if you're actually put like, because now you know the dollar sign doesn't actually think that you're selling something for $4.97, but everyone reading it knows what it is.
Right.
Another thing, if you have to use a word like free or whatnot, you can put like a Spanish E over it, give it a little accent, because again, it's reading it literally.
Yeah.
So if you really can't replace the word in the sentence, you can just add accents to those vowels that have it, and Gmail's not going to read it for the literal word free.
Mm.
And then the best hack here.
Yeah.
Done.
You ready?
You need to test your emails to see where they land before you mail out. So what I mean by that is that you want to open two different kinds of Gmail accounts. One of the Gmail accounts you don't ever click anything in. One of the Gmail accounts you do click stuff in. The reason for that is what you're doing is you're simulating inboxes. If you are able to land in the primary tab for about four different emails that are the ones you never open any emails in, you then can mail out to your list. If you're landing and only like, let's say 50% of them are going to promo and primary, you need to go line by line in that email to figure out which word is causing it to go to promo, change that, and then retest it to make sure it's landing in primary. These will allow you to know that if you are hitting 100% in primary, once you mail out, you have a much higher likelihood of landing in promo. I'm sorry, landing in primary, which means your overall open rates will be much higher than before.
Boom. Psh, mic drop. Yo, Brett, this is incredible, man. I can't wait to, I'm driving my ass home fast as hell, implement all this stuff that you're teaching me right now. This is fantastic, man.
I appreciate it.
I'm sure that everybody's going to be able to at least learn a little bit off this, whether you're an email marketer or not, whether you are a marketer or not. This is very valuable stuff because like you said, everybody has an email. Mm-hmm. Everybody uses their email, whether it's to promote, whether it's to communicate, whether it's to do internal communications, because sometimes companies, domains can actually be blacklisted and then you have trouble communicating internally. Like your actual team or staff could actually be seeing stuff go to spam.
Yeah.
So everything you're talking about here is very, very cool. A lot of it is very technical. People might not be able to capture all the technicality behind it, but that's what people like us are for. That's what companies like freelancer.com are for, and any Upwork, whatever other softwares that help you find great talent to help you out with this, take a look at it. And if you want to learn more about sales, about copywriting, about marketing, talk to them about where they could go sign up for your newsletter.
Yes. Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at Brett, B-R-E-T-T dot Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N, the numbers 26. And go to our website, wearewellspring, W-E-L-L-S, spring, like the season, media.com, then sign up for our email list. When you sign up for our email list, you will be able to have your emails audited and checked for free, which means we'll help you see what inbox your emails are landing in and show you the steps you need to take to make sure you are in primary. Because again, if you happen to not be listening to what I said beforehand, our list of 43K went from 20% opens to 60% opens just from understanding deliverability. We have another client who was in spam. He was only doing 25,000 a month when he was doing a launch. We got him out of spam into primary. Now he's doing 86,000 just because his emails were in the primary inbox, because you're getting more eyeballs.
So, yeah, you're already spending the money bringing that traffic in. Yeah. Might as well make sure that everything is optimized the way it needs to be so you can drive more cash through the door.
Totally.
Guys, this is Alex Quinn, Brett Kaufman, Hustle Inspires Hustle, Miami. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could share, leave a review, and subscribe to the show. Visit hustleinspireshustle.com/app for more free resources, event invitations, and online courses to empower your personal and financial success. Learn about marketing, finances, business development, branding, strategic partnerships, and much more. If you're looking to further connect, check me out on Instagram or LinkedIn at Alex Quinn. That's A-L-E-X-Q-U-I-N. See you on the next episode.